98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
In the NFL, there is a big difference between failed and fired. Cliff Kingsbury does not need to worry about the latter. But the Cardinals head coach will be under a different kind of pressure Monday in Los Angeles, win a playoff game, and a giant burden of proof will be lifted from his shoulders. Lose to the Rams, and it's going to be another loud, uncomfortable offseason for the polarizing head coach. Now, Kingsbury seems to understand this. He said earlier this week that being in the second round of the playoffs is way better than winning a division title. It was his way of saying, beat the Rams, and the messy collapse in 2021 goes away. And that's fair. But if the Cardinals are one and done in the NFL playoffs, that will mark five losses in the last six games. It will mirror what the Steelers did last season, falling apart after an 11-0 start. But unlike Mike Tomlin, there are no Super Bowl victories or division championships on Kingsbury's resume, and there will be a heavy price to pay if 10-2 ends up as 11-7. Now, when Steve Keim said last week that Kingsbury has done a, quote, phenomenal job, he must have known it was a gross overstatement and certainly premature, but it was also confirmation that Kingsbury has met the requirements to keep his job, which was to make the playoffs. But this sport is about trophies, not progress, not baby steps, and at this point, making the playoffs is no longer good enough. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
And you say, we won the best records in the National Football League. And you have to put things in perspective. And in my opinion, I think Cliff Kingsbury's not only done a phenomenal job, I think he's the coach of the year. And people can say, why? Why would you say Cliff Kingsbury won two of three games without our starting quarterback with a number of players missing. And I know other people miss players, but we won two games with Colt McCoy, and McCoy played at a high level. And I can't say enough good things about Cliff, and really happy with him. And I know Michael's happy with him as well.
That is the interview snippet that which you referred to in the Bickley Blast. That's Steve Keim, the general manager of the Cardinals, with Burns and Gambo last Friday. A glowing endorsement of Cliff Kingsbury.
Over the top.
Again, that was before the Seattle game. They have lost four of five. They've lost five straight home games. There is a bit of a feeling of a clean slate, but let's not forget that the Cardinals were able to win a game on the road this year without Cliff Kingsbury on the sidelines. And he did have, you know, influence on what happened, but the game day operation he was not involved in, and they won that football game. I don't think there's any.
There have been people who told me that the play calling has never been more crisp than that week when Cliff was actually gone. Now I'm not trying to.
You look at the results.
I personally believe this. I think Cliff's a cool dude. I think he certainly is very good at some things. I really think going forward that he should design the offense, design the plays. I think somebody else should do the play calling and let him graduate into a more traditional head coaching kind of role and see how that thing works out in the future. Now, that being said, if the Cardinals come out and they've got a really good game plan and Cliff gets that team in rhythm with his play calling, then he can make all this go away. And I believe it will. I believe if you're a head coach like Cliff Kingsbury, you're somewhere in between. You're not a head coach that just lost his job. There were seven of them that did, right? And yet you're not a head coach who is considered elite. And there's a handful of those guys as well. Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Sean McVay, Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin. There are guys on that level. If Cliff wins a playoff game, winning a playoff game for a head coach, that means something. Cliff can really go a long way into making this whole narrative that predates his time with the Cardinals, that dates all the way back to his college tenure at Texas Tech. And I understand what people say about his time in college, that you play a few non-conference games and you get into the Big 12 season. Yeah, you're going to struggle more in the back half than you will in the front half if you're coaching at Texas Tech. I get that. But it's certainly a pattern you cannot deny.
No, you can't.
And it's a pattern that continued with some pretty good players at Texas Tech. So it's part of his deal. He can make that go away with a victory and a good performance. I know that optics matter, and if the Cardinals play a classic game and lose 49-45, then maybe that failure will not hit the way a playoff loss would.
Sure.
But if this is a one-sided playoff loss, if this is something where the offense can't get going and it's another one of those frustrating games and Kyler Murray's throwing his helmet and all that, if this unravels, then this is going to be a tough deal, because it's clear that the organization has that word phenomenal. The reason I take umbrage to it, that's a big word.
It is, and I think a certain point of the season, you'd be comfortable with the description of phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. 10-2, certainly.
But an NFL season is not 12 weeks. It's not 12 games anymore. So, yeah, I agree with you there. Where it gets a little fuzzy for me in the evaluation of Cliff Kingsbury and you know, your point of, hey, if they win a playoff game, let's label this a success.
Without a doubt.
If they lose the playoff game, it's hard to label it that way. You can look at it a different way, and I'm not saying I do, but I'm considering all options here. Is the football team taking steps forward? And when you inherit a 3-win team and you go to 5 wins with a first-year quarterback, and there were certainly growing pains and lumps along the way, it wasn't all pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to 8 wins, and that would, people took umbrage with that. Hey, it's improvement, but they blew their chance at the playoffs.
They were 6-3 at one point in time.
It was still unequivocally a step forward that they were in a position to blow a playoff spot. This year, being 10-2, backing into the playoffs, still territory they have not been in. So, you know, Cliff Kingsbury defenders can say they have made those steps.
Yeah.
And I think that is true regardless of what happens on Monday. The issue is, how slow are you walking?
That's a pretty slow walk
for a sport where you made enough veteran talent acquisitions to really put this thing into fast forward.
Without a doubt.
And that did not happen.
And that's the thing, too. I think that Steve Keim, to use that word, it almost sort of strikes at the really good job that he did this year assembling this roster.
Mm-hmm.
When you say a coach has done a phenomenal job, generally speaking, you're saying that coach did more with the talent you gave him than anyone could have expected. And I don't think that's the case with Cliff Kingsbury at all. And the thing that I'm looking at here is, once again, these games that mean the most at the back end of seasons. We saw what happened at the end of last year. We know that the number is 0-5 in terms of playoff clinching games in which the Cardinals could have punched their own ticket and it didn't happen. They backed into the playoffs. They responded with a very good win in Dallas, and then they had a chance to win the division, and they put forth that game against the Seahawks. If you have a playoff game now and it's more of that, there has to be accountability for that. You can't celebrate that level of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Not if you're serious about winning championships.
But then here's another way to look at it. Cliff Kingsbury, in his coaching class of 2019, one of 8 coaches hired in that cycle, easily the most controversial, easily the most, wow, that's an interesting move. Of those 8, half of them are already out of their jobs.
Is that right?
Freddie Kitchens got fired in Cleveland. Vic Fangio's out. Brian Flores out. Adam Gase lasted 2 years in New York. The other 4, Kingsbury and Taylor, both going to the playoffs for the first time. Matt LaFleur's been a playoff coach now for the 3rd straight year, and Bruce Arians, who's won a Super Bowl.
Wow.
So he's part of the group that's still standing, and they have a chance to erase a lot of the negative feelings about that if they still linger. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, could J.J. Watt be back on the field and actually make an impact for the Arizona Cardinals on Monday? It's looking pretty possible. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Soul on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Marotta talk cards in the playoffs. Now.
Obviously, his numbers and the way he was playing before the injury speak for themselves. But again, you know, I've been told to shut my mouth, so I'm not going to say anything.
By him?
I'm not going to get into it.
Zach Allen of the Arizona Cardinals, talking about his teammate, J.J. Watt, and the potential return. That was after the game on Sunday. And we've had new developments. J.J. Watt last Friday was designated for a return to practice. There's reports out there yesterday from Jeremy Fowler from ESPN that say, hey, he could come back to practice on Thursday in preparation for a Monday night playoff game. Again, and you know, I've stated this, and I truly believe this. Mm-hmm. If J.J. Watt steps on the field for one play, just him putting on that uniform, he's the type of player that can give a team an emotional lift. Whether or that or not that means a win is another thing entirely. But
yeah.
I think it's you can't argue the fact that getting a player of his stature back in any form where he could put that uniform on before a playoff game,
mm-hmm.
it's going to do something for his teammates.
Yeah, there were mixed reviews when the Cardinals signed J.J. Watt. I think all of us locally loved the idea just because we knew inherently the lack of internal leadership that this team had last year. And so I think from that standpoint, we all kind of saw the beauty in this.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of national people who thought, you're spending that much money on J.J. Watt? I thought J.J. Watt, he got hurt in week seven. Is that what it was? Yeah, week seven.
Houston.
I thought he was really good for seven games.
He was.
And so the fact that he's going to try to make this happen, I think the moment speaks to him. I think he's a big-time player. He's a big-time personality. He lives for this kind of stuff. And like I said, he's one of those athletes who are the pride of Wisconsin. I think he sees a chance for maybe playing the Packers in Lambeau, and I think he would want to be all over that. And he's got a lot of playoff experience in Houston. You forget how often Houston made the postseason mm-hmm. during his time there.
It is true.
They didn't have a lot of success.
But they were there a lot.
They were there a lot. And I just think his presence in the huddle in this kind of a game is something that guys would rally around. They would feel comforted by having him in that huddle.
Yeah, last Friday when Steve Keim talked about it with Burns and Gambo, kind of detailed what J.J. Watt did in order to move up that timeline on his return.
We'll sign J.J. Watt. I got to know him a little bit through the signing process, but the next, say, 7-8 months was a different story. I mean, it kind of goes back to what he brought to the table from a leadership standpoint in the locker room, sort of how his energy permeated through the building. And then to have that kind of injury setback, really disappointed for all of us. But not once did J.J. show signs of feeling sorry for himself. And in fact, now I look at how fast he's healed, how hard he has worked, and you know, the time I've been doing this, it's like you look at your roster and there's 52 players and then there's J.J. Watt. He is different, and he is different in every way. I'm telling you, like, he does things that I've never seen a player do before, and, again, have a lot of respect and admiration for him.
Yeah, there's a reason why the Watt brothers have been as successful as they've been in the league is because of that level of work that they're willing to do. Is not normal, even for a league full of hard workers. Now, again, from that same interview with Burns and Gambo, Steve Keim on, all right, could he come back? Would he be limited?
That would be a better question for the medical team and for J.J. I know this. If you ask J.J., he probably wouldn't want to be limited. His ability to create energy and to take over games inside, and it may not have to do with stats, but it can be with disruption. To get on the edges of interior offensive linemen and to create havoc is exceptional. We saw that the first 7 or 8 games. But, you know, he's been working hard, and I know this is something that he has certainly focused his goals on and just awfully proud of him.
Somebody once told me that nothing rattles a quarterback more than pressure up the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterbacks become not immune, but they're very well of the danger on the edges. And that's why they reward their offensive linemen with handsome gifts every holiday season. But it's the guys who can generate pressure straight up the field through the center, through the interior of the offensive line. That can unnerve a quarterback. J.J. Watt can do that. Aaron Donald does that.
Yeah, but let's also factor in, let's take pass rush out of it. Pressure up the middle, yeah, huge factor. But where the Cardinals struggled at different times and certainly struggled mightily on Sunday was against defending the run.
Yeah.
J.J. Mm-hmm. Watt, you know, he's made a lot of his headlines and a lot of his reputation is built on getting after the quarterback, but he's an option to you know, help stop the run or at least contain the run.
Yeah.
And the Rams running game could get a lift of its own this week with Cam Akers coming back.
We went into the season thinking, okay, J.J. Watt applying pressure on the internal area quadrant of an offensive line. He's going to command double teams. He's going to make life very easy or easier for Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden. Both Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden have flashed this season, but it hasn't been, it never was as pronounced as it was in week one.
Mm-hmm.
I think week one happened and we were all like, oh, that's what J.J. Watt does. Look at Chandler Jones. And then,
and also,
know.
Marcus Golden feels like he's been a lot less impactful in these last handful of games than he was at sort of the middle of the season.
Yeah, and it's but again, Marcus Golden has never been that dominant guy from start to finish of an NFL season.
He's a guy that flashes.
He's been more like a Hassan Reddick kind of guy, a guy that flashes. And so there better be some flashing in Los Angeles. It's The key to
should go to Venice Beach then.
Well, there you go. The key to me, really, I think both teams can do this. With J.J. Watt, I think the Cardinals can apply pressure on Matthew Stafford without blitzing. And that's really, really important, especially given the state of their secondary. Conversely, we know the Rams can generate pressure with just four guys, and those are the games.
They can generate pressure with one guy. Rams send one, and there's a sack by Donald.
Those are the games where Kyler Murray gets unnerved. You saw it against the Seahawks on Sunday. When teams get at him with four guys, he doesn't know where to go with the football because there's nobody obviously open.
The Rams with the rare dropping 10.
Right.
Rushing one.
The drop 10 strategy.
One guy in the box.
That's right. Yeah. Aaron, he's ridiculous. Even watching some of the clips of that 49, he just throws dudes around.
It's amazing that somebody could be, when your entire game plan is to stop one guy, and we've seen Chandler Jones struggle with this, that when your entire game plan is to stop one guy, you still can't stop him. That's what sort of makes Aaron Donald on that level, I guess, above Chandler Jones right now. Because in the last few years, when we're talking about Chandler Jones should have been Defensive Player of the Year in the discussion, or he's the most dominant, he could be taken out of games when game plan against it feels like much more so than an Aaron Donald.
And it's not impossible to do that with Donald. I think the Cardinals did it the first time they played, but it just seems to happen a lot more infrequently with Donald.
Yes.
Which is a tribute to him, especially considering where he lines up. And he does move around, but for the most part in the interior of that line. To dominate from that spot, that's a special skill. But J.J. Watt coming back in any capacity is a plus for the Arizona Cardinals. Coming up next, Phoenix Suns get a win last night in Toronto on a long road trip. We'll talk about the Suns, all about the Suns, with the Hall of Famer Al McCoy next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Ball drives in underneath, lobs it, DA's there, whammo time!
Al, about the Suns. Hall of Famer Suns broadcaster Al McCoy calls in to talk Suns with Bickley and Marotta.
Suns win! The Suns win!
Al, about the Suns, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Yeah, Wednesdays we get the pleasure of talking to the Hall of Famer, the legendary voice of the Phoenix Suns, Al McCoy, Al About the Suns. That happens right now here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Good morning to you, Al. How are you?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Nice to be with you, and hope things are going great.
They're going well, and the Suns are living right, too. I tweeted out after that game last night in Toronto, Al. I don't know how they did it, but they did it. The Suns found a way to win, and Bick and I were talking about it earlier. That's what good teams do. When things aren't firing on all cylinders, they find just enough to win games, and they did it against a good team last night. That was not a pretty win, but an impressive win, I thought.
Well, they probably didn't deserve to win it. And I'll give you just a quick analogy of the Suns. And, of course, as you know, it's hard to be critical when you have a team that's on top of the league, 31 wins, 9 losses. On the road, they're 14-4. Of course, last year they had the best road record in the NBA, but they're a little out of sync right now. And let me give you just a little two-minute report on, I think, what has happened. Now, as we know, the Suns got off to a soft start, lost a few games, but then really came on strong after that. Of course, had the 18-game winning streak and were just outplaying everybody. Their energy level, their physicality, every part of the game was really top-notch. And until just a few weeks ago, There were only two teams that had not been hit by the pandemic, by the COVID virus, Utah and the Suns. That changed. Now, earlier, the Suns had gotten by without Šarić, without Kaminsky. They'd had DA miss some games. They'd had Booker miss some games. But they've been able to handle that. But then all of a sudden, things started to kind of get a little shaky. They had players go into the protocol. They just weren't feeling right about their game. And they had to start bringing in some new faces. And they did that. And on the last road trip, they were very impressive in the last two games on that road trip in Charlotte and New Orleans, but not with their normal starting players.
Right.
Then when the starters started to come back, they weren't quite ready. Now, they're a little out of sync right now. I don't think there's any question about that. But I can't tell you how many times through the years when a team was maybe not playing their best and a coach would say, we need to get out on the road. And I think this is the ideal thing for the Suns right now. They didn't deserve to win that game last night. They didn't play that well at all. But even though they're going to be gone for 2 weeks, they have only five games and they have days off. Now, they don't play today. They don't play tomorrow. What this means is they now have some really good practice time. They're all together on the road. And I think when they come back from this road trip, things are going to start to fall in place. But right now, being very honest with you, they're a little out of sync.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Before last year's playoffs, I was really growing increasingly frustrated with DeAndre Ayton because we all see his physical gifts. Then the playoffs happened, and he was absolutely dominant and answered every question anybody had about him. He's back now in a mode where he's not quite playing with that kind of energy. They had to get on him at halftime last night, and to his credit, he responded in the second half. But I guess what I'm asking is, what do you make of the Suns' rebounding issues as of late? Is this part of what you're talking about, or do you think this has to be addressed some way, somehow?
Well, it's part of what I'm talking about. To rebound, you've got to be physical. You've got to be aggressive. You've got to body up people. And they haven't been doing that. They were earlier in the year. And as far as DeAndre Ayton is concerned, I wish they'd get him the ball a little more often. I mean, earlier, the pick and roll with he and CP3 was terrific, but he just isn't getting the ball offensively hardly at all. I think in the first half last night, he had, what, two shots?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not going to get rebounds if he's not going to get the basketball. And I think once they kind of realize that they've got to go to him more offensively, they're going to be better off.
Al McCoy, the Hall of Famer, our guest on Wednesdays. It's Al about the Suns. We talk Phoenix Suns basketball here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Bick and I were also talking earlier about Devin Booker's recent performance. And Book was in a spot until recently, Al, where it looked like, okay, now we're going to get the consistent three-point shooting, the consistent 30 points a game. And he's hit a little bit of a snag, 28% over his last three games. He did hit a big shot last night, but is he past the point where a few game stretch is of concern because of how diligent he is in what he does?
Well, he was out with a hamstring, mm-hmm. and you don't know what that situation is for sure right now. But I think it just falls in place, as I mentioned earlier, that they're just a little out of sync. Things just aren't going. Now, a lot of that is their ability to come out and play hard. You know my old line that I've used for 50 years in the NBA. If you come out and play hard every night, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
And the Suns haven't done that in the last 7, 8, 9 games. We haven't seen that energy, that really tough, hard-nosed
right.
play that we saw when they won 18 in a row. And that's why I said I think this road trip is really timely, because they're going to have a lot of practice time. They're together. They have no outside interest. And I think when they come back, things are going to start and fall in place. We'll see, that's for sure. And obviously, Booker has not been shooting the ball the way we expect him to. And maybe that's another reason why they should look inside to DeAndre Ayton a little bit more.
I've been hearing and reading a lot of, and I'm using air quotes here, Al, a lot of NBA experts starting to kind of put together trade possibilities, what they think the Suns might need to do. And part of me is a little indignant about that, because if you're watching them, you know they've got great depth, better depth than I think they've ever had in my history watching the Suns. And I don't think they necessarily need anything. But then I started to think, would you like to upgrade a backup point guard? My point is, when you look at the trade deadline, is there anything that might pique your interest if you were James Jones?
I don't think so. I like what they have. And I think we have to mention, and Monty Williams said this himself, he's been a little confused with how he's been using players in the last few games. And I think that's going to start to fall in place on this road trip. You know, with all these new faces and the way Jalen Smith played and the people they've picked up and how they've contributed, he's had a little difficulty getting the right combinations on the floor at the right time. And he said so after these last couple of games that he isn't quite in sync himself. And that's why I think this road trip will help out. I just hate to see them break up this team unless it's something really spectacular.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, you talk about the power forward spot. You always look for help there. But then, look, Jay Crowder certainly bounced back last night.
Yes.
He was one of the few bright spots in the game, and it was good to see him back with strength and shooting the ball after having been in the safety protocol. But I'm one of these right now that would not really be in favor of shaking too much up with any trades right now. I think you've got a winning combination, and you've got depth.
As if the Western Conference weren't hard enough as it was, you've got the return of Klay Thompson in Golden State, and now you've got the rise of this Ja Morant kid who is just fabulous in Memphis. What do you think about that?
Well, you might remember that when we played Memphis the first time, I said, this is a darn good basketball team.
Yep.
And Ja Morant is an outstanding player. It's a good team, and they are going to be in the hunt in the West. I mean, right now they're fourth, and they're going to be hurt from, no question about it. Now, you mentioned Golden State and Klay Thompson. Here's the only thing I think you have to look at. The players that have stepped up, you could mention Poole and several others for Golden State, mm-hmm. aren't going to be getting their shots anymore.
That's right.
Now the ball is going to be going to Klay Thompson. I don't know how much better this Golden State team will be with Klay, because some of those other players that really stepped up in his absence just aren't going to be getting the basketball anymore because Klay Thompson's going to get those shots. So it's still a wait-and-see thing for the Warriors, and, of course, they've lost a couple games of late.
Yeah, including one to Memphis last night. Al, always good to talk to you. We'll do it again next Wednesday. Enjoy your week.
I'll tell you what, I'll plan on being here, guys.
Sounds
Thank
good.
You, Al. You're the best.
Thank you, Al. Hall of Famer Al McCoy, Al About the Suns. He joins us Wednesday mornings to talk Phoenix Suns basketball. Coming up next as we continue preparation for the Arizona Cardinals returning to the playoffs. Rodney Hudson has been a player who's been kind of labeled as a security blanket for the Cardinals offensive line. One outfit doesn't seem to think that's the case. We'll tell you on their findings next. Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Soul on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Marotta talk cards in the playoffs now.
Yeah, I think it's big, you know, being able to get back and work together, you know, communicating, working together on the field, in the meeting rooms, I think it's big. So the more time we have together, the better. So, you know, unfortunately, we've had some injuries and other issues or whatnot, which are part of the game. So it's good to be back together.
That's Rodney Hudson, center for the Arizona Cardinals, part of the offensive line that has been shuffled a lot, especially in the second half of the season. And that might be one of the ingredients for the Cardinals' struggles in the second half of the mm-hmm. season. But that was Rodney Hudson last week talking about, hey, getting everybody back. DJ Humphreys had missed a game on COVID, on the COVID list. He was back last week. Having that group back together, what was termed the playoff offensive line for the Cardinals, wasn't necessarily a plus in their regular season finale against Seattle. Don't think the offensive line played very well, especially in protecting Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not say that Rodney Hudson has been a lot of people. We've had discussions, whether they come up in Rush Hour Reboot or Social Studies, and even polling a lot of our audience on unsung hero / off the radar MVPs. Rodney Hudson has got a lot of mention in that because of what he means in solidifying that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to Pro Football Focus, Bick, and you look at their center rankings for the 2021 season, again, this is not the Bible of football. This is one sports website that has their own methodology on rating players, but to have Rodney Hudson ranked as the 29th best center this year in the NFL seems
a whiff.
Ludicrous.
Seems almost malicious, maybe.
Has Rodney Hudson ever, have you ever, I'm not going to speak for you, I'll speak for me, but I think you're on board. When we watch football, we're not watching interior line play. You meant it, most football viewers, when they notice interior line plays, because somebody screwed up big
without
time.
Without a doubt.
I don't remember Rodney Hudson screwing up that much.
I don't recall. I mean, there have been a couple of moments. There's been a penalty here. There's been a bad snap there, even with Rodney Hudson and not just Max Garcia. But for the most part, I can't recall him ever getting beat by a nose tackle. I don't recall him ever missing an assignment. I'm with you. I'm totally on board with you. It's laughable to me. And you could make a case. And the thing that was ironic about it is Mason Cole, who was once on the Cardinals, ended up being ranked very high on this list.
Yeah, he was ranked 14th among centers, with an overall grade of 69.5 in 471 snaps by Pro Football Focus. So he was, you know, he was in a group with just behind Ryan Jensen of Tampa Bay, Alex Mack of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Those are a couple of the premier centers in the league.
He's not in that company. And so here's my issue with Pro Football Focus is I know that their methodology is what it is, but they've got quite a reputation for putting out data that makes a lot of sense and putting out data that makes you go, that's not right. That is just not at all what my eyes are telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's impossible that Rodney Hudson internally could be considered a team MVP candidate and ranked 29th in the league.
Weird, right?
Think
about when he was out. And then every Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, everybody talking, all the other linemen talking about how big and how important it was that he was coming back. Like, they obviously feel his value within the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I use the term security blanket, too, in kind of previewing what we were going to talk about here. Rodney Hudson talked about exactly that last week when he spoke to the media about that security blanket for his quarterback.
It starts with a preparation. I just try to prepare, know what to look for out there on the field, trust what I see on Sundays, and then just try to get it done to the best of my abilities based on what I study during the week.
Yeah, I mean, center is probably the least glamorous position.
Right. Now, I've heard some people say, well, Pro Football Focus hates the Cardinals, and that's why this is happening the way it is. That's not accurate.
No, I don't buy that either.
Rodney Hudson, going into the 2021 season, was rated as the best center in the NFL by Pro Football Focus.
And so what changed? His team.
Yeah.
They hate the Cardinals.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right. Well, but they've had no issues. Their data, their methodology has had no issues identifying Rodney Hudson as the impact player we all believe him to be. In fact, entering the season, their analytics singled out his pass blocking, the strength that he shows in pass blocking. He's had the highest mark among centers in that category in every season from 2015 through 2019. So that to me tells you something. So what is it in their data that is leading people to believe, or leading their methodology to believe he's having a bad year?
Look, I can't answer that question without knowing their methodology and what their process is. I imagine it's a painstaking process that they go through, which is probably the reason why they're the only website that does it. But let's also consider that Rodney Hudson played through rib injury, too, and got a lot of kudos from his team for gutting through that. And being at the center of the offensive line with a rib injury, that can't be fun.
No, it can't. But so I don't think that this is really an accurate thing. And I'm quite certain he doesn't care, which is good. But it's weird is what it is.
Well, and, if you want to talk about impact players that are opposing the Cardinals this week, Aaron Donald lines up right in the middle of that defensive line. I think everybody with an interest in the Arizona Cardinals feels a heck of a lot better having Rodney Hudson at center as opposed to not when you're going up against an Aaron Donald.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times, too, the teams, Rodney Hudson is really good against teams that really want to kind of practice deception at the line of scrimmage, show blitzers that end up dropping back in coverage. He's really because he's got experience. He's seen all of this stuff, and he can help Kyler Murray get the team into the right play. So, I kind of reject that stat from Pro Football Focus. It just doesn't jibe with what we've seen all season long.
Yeah, now Rodney,
so either we're idiots or they've got a bad chunk of data on their hands.
Both can be true.
That's true.
Not an either or situation there.
That's right. It's not either or. That's
not
a good point.
Exclusive. Rodney Hudson did play in that game in Glendale against the Rams, where Aaron Donald wreaked havoc. Not blaming Rodney Hudson for him. Aaron Donald can do that to you. And you brought up that possibility earlier in the week that maybe after that first meeting between the Cardinals and Rams, there were some people spouting off about, wow, Aaron Donald was neutralized. He wasn't much of a factor in that game. Did he take note of it? File it away for the next time he saw the Cardinals? Is that note still filed away?
Yeah, that's
because
right. That's
something to consider.
I was looking back at that. This is the closest thing I could find to any trash talk like that. This is Kyler Murray. This is back in October, first time they played, talking about how they handled Aaron Donald.
He's a great player, if not the best in the league. But I think today, like I said, our offensive line blocked their ass off today. It was a good plan.
There's nothing trash talky about that.
No.
This is the only other one we have. This is Kingsbury talking about a good plan for Donald.
Yeah, he was there. I mean, he was disruptive, as always. I think we had a good plan. Coach Kugler had a good plan to try and get two bodies on him most of the day. And he was back there sometimes, and then that's going to happen. And I thought Kyler did a good job, too, of escaping some of the times that he was back there. But he's as good a defensive player as I've ever seen, and he definitely had an impact on the game.
So those are the only two comments.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I don't know this for certain, I think it came from a member of the Cardinals' offensive line. Might have been DJ Humphreys. Now, I shouldn't say that without knowing it, but that's where I seem to recall it coming from.
DJ Humphreys doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that talks a lot, Big.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And along those lines, having a good plan that first matchup, here's items 1 through 5 offensively. Mm-hmm. Have a good plan for number 99 on Monday.
Right.
Your chances of winning go up precipitously if that happens.
Right. That's very, very true. And to me, that's going to be so elemental to everything. Is will Kyler Murray feel a sense of comfort from his offensive line against the Rams, because you have got two wildly different games to draw upon.
Yeah.
A game in Los Angeles, as Kyler said, that offensive line held up wonderfully.
Yeah, if you're looking for similarities between those two, good luck in finding them. Coming up next, 9 o'clock, it's time to get social with Sarah the Ruthless. Social Studies is next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.